The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk, episode 495, to be broadcast on Wednesday, August 19th, 2026, on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. If you're watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment, and I may or may not be able to get back to you. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show and you're listening on Facebook Live, you can comment right down here below, or you can just send me an email at bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Ron's Rant of the Week. Where do we begin? Strava segments on group rides. So we all know what a Strava segment is if we ride our bikes a lot and we are subscribed to said app, which basically compares us with everybody else that's out there. It's a great way to compete with your friends when you really don't want to. A little annoying. Yeah, I find it annoying. I've come and gone with Strava a few times. Sometimes I'm on it for a while and then I just shut it back down because it's just kind of a, I don't know. It's made for the competitive people that are out there riding bicycles. And I kind of had that day, and I don't really do that as much anymore. So anyway, it gets annoying. Sometimes I just play with it just because I want to compare and see where I'm at, but most of the time, not so excited about it. So hunting Strava segments on a social or non-drop group ride is generally considered rude. Yeah, it turns a shared cooperative experience into a secret race, which breaks up the pack and leaves slower riders behind. Why is it rude? Breaks up the group. Leaves people behind. Safety risks. Sinking your head into a bike computer to check a segment live while riding in a tight pack can cause crashes. When it's acceptable. It's acceptable if you're on a drop ride. If you're on a ride that the description says that we're going to go fast, we don't care about you, we don't care about how fast we are or whether we dump you out in the middle of nowhere, then it's a great time to do it. If that ride also, let's say if you go on a ride that has regroup points, if the group prearranges a designated open section like a specific hill where everybody agrees to go hard and waits at the top, yeah, you can do it there. And anyway, so it's sort of a no-no, so to speak. I appreciate the fact that people are on Strava, and I appreciate the fact that they use it for their training and for their personal enjoyment. I just don't care to see it on a group ride that is supposed to be a friendly ride. But anyway, that's my rant. It's not my rant. I have more. And all this talk last week from the Tour de Femme, the inequity of women's racing. Spoiler alert, don't quit your day job. We'll get to that a little bit later in the show. On a positive side, shout out to Atlanta, Georgia, brand new Midtown Street, almost ready for public access. So they have the 15th Street in downtown Atlanta has been designed for better cyclist, pedestrian, and driver mobility near the connector. So anyway, Atlanta is paying attention. They're doing things right, as many, many cities are doing it right now, starting to include bicycle infrastructure into all of their urban planning. And if you are in a town or a city that is not doing that at this time, this is the time to go to your local town meeting and join in on the public comment. Public comment is, in our town, you're allowed 5 minutes to sit in front of the town council and tell them what you think. And if it's something that you think is necessary to help make things safer for cyclists and pedestrians, then you got my pat on the back, that's for sure. It's a good thing. So anyway, that's the appropriate time to do something like that. And you never know, you might get interest. You know, who knows? Maybe one of your town council members happens to be a bike rider. And they go, you know what? I heard what you were saying. And, you know, I think that we could probably do something here. And it opens a discussion and a meeting point. So it's a good thing. Anyway, let's move on into the show a little bit further. There's probably a lot more positive stuff to talk about, but that's what I have for today. So, mechanical minute and bike tips. This one came across the other day because I was talking to some of my senior fitness people. I teach a lot of senior fitness classes now, and they don't all say this, but a number of them say, well, I have a bike, but I don't ride it anymore. And, you know, one particular one was this woman who is, you know, her knees are not great, and she's, you know, suffering from the pain around them and doesn't like to walk too much because her knees hurt. And I said, what about riding a bike? And she said, well, actually, I feel better riding a bike. Quite honestly, she said, I feel okay. But she said, I have a problem with traffic, and, you know, I don't want to expose myself out there. I suggested rail trails. I suggested, you know, any kind of a protected trail is certainly a lot safer to ride. But anyway, how to learn to ride a bike later in life. And then that's the other one I heard is, I've heard this from different people, and they go, you know, I used to ride a bike all the time, but quite honestly, I think I've forgotten how to do it. You never forget how to ride your bike, do you? Oh, well. I forget that I come from a world that is very, very shallow and narrow at times, because I just assume that everybody knows how to ride a bike. But you know what? It can happen. So learning to ride a bike later in life can not only be fun and rewarding for older adults, but it improves fitness and enjoy. You can enjoy the outdoors, and it's a low impact and easier on the joints than many other forms of exercise. And regular riding can really be a bonus to you physically. If you talk to doctors who are recommending exercise going into your lifestyle, the first two things they talk about is swimming and cycling as being easier on your body. And so maybe it's time to explore this a little bit closer. So that's what we're going to do today. I'm going to talk about it just a bit more. And let's see here. So there's a couple of different pieces here about this. And I'm just going to read some stuff here that I found very, very interesting. And it talks about why, of course, the cycling is better for or good for older adults. And it puts less strain on your body. And it's really kind of a perfect solution, because running and other high impact activities, need I say pickleball for all those crazy pickleball people with all the injuries all of a sudden. Yeah, that's I knew that was going to happen. It's just, you know, it's a fascination. People love playing pickleball because it's sort of like tennis. It's sort of like table tennis. It's sort of like, it's supposed to be less impactful and less movement on the body. And I just see all these injuries. It's really sad. But, you know, maybe riding your bike would be a better idea. So, how should you choose a bike if you're an older adult? Maybe you might look at that old, Italian racing bike that you had years ago, and you go and you dust it all off, and you take a look at the seat and go, ooh, yeah, I remember that seat. That takes a little while to get used to. Or, you know, you look at the dropped handlebars and you go, maybe that's not such a good idea either, because now I just don't have the same flexibility I had. Did I mention anything about always working on your flexibility? My flexibility is it's not wonderful, especially since I had the cervical fusion with 16 screws and two titanium rods. I have lost some flexibility. Now, that was done by surgery, but the alternative was no longer being able to walk, so I decided it was probably a good alternative. But it did change the way that I position myself on my bike, and it also is not uncommon to see people that are older that are in need of something to make it more comfortable for them to ride. And that upright position is a much better position for that. I have taken my e-bike, which is my commuter, and it's actually a conversion, and it was a hybrid, kind of a upper end hybrid from the Trek Bicycle Company, and it's been really a pleasure to ride because I'm not sore when I ride it. I do get tired of being in the same position all the time, whereas on my drop bar bike, I tend to bend over a little bit more, and I can change my pressure on the saddle by doing that. There's a whole bunch of reasons why I like drop bars better, but at the same time, I need to be comfortable when I'm riding my bike, or I can't ride it for very long. So I've converted a couple of my road bikes to more upright positions, stems that go more in, they angle up, actually. You can get these adjustable stems. They work remarkably well, and they're a great way of positioning yourself on the bike for maybe a future change in the stem as you're learning to figure and trying to figure out where you really need to be. But let's go back to the upright position, because if you're older and you're getting yourself back into cycling, that upright position may be just the answer you're looking for. It's going to give you a little bit more stability because you're sitting upright, your hands are, your body is more upright, and so your balance is not taxed as much as it is when you're on a drop bar bike. So that certainly is going to work better for you. And just if you go down the list of things that the bicycle does for you, like your cardiovascular health, as we get older, we have more challenges with that. And it's just getting out and moving consistently every day makes a huge, huge difference there. I tell people the idea is not how fast you go or how far you go. It's just that you go. You just got to go. You just got to keep moving. Never stop moving. When you stop moving, you stop moving. Is that fairly understandable? I think that's pretty simple. When you stop moving, you stop moving. So I see people that they give up and they stop doing the things that you used to love to do because the pain, the position on the bike, the, you know, whatever it is, the fitness, all that stuff. You don't have to do that. There's all sorts of answers out there. So the other thing that people don't understand is that cycling helps with your balance and coordination. You find as we get older, I teach two balance classes a week. So if this is something that I find to be one of the most challenging classes I teach of all my senior fitness classes, my balance class is definitely the hardest one. And the problem is, as we age, our balance and coordination declines, and our increase of risk of falling also increase. You know, that's a problem. So, however, learning to ride a bike can help improve those skills and reduce the risk of falls. Cycling requires balance and coordination, which can help seniors maintain these skills and improve their overall mobility. Additionally, cycling can help strengthen the muscles in the legs and core, which can also improve balance and stability. So if you're looking for fun and effective way to reduce your risk of falls and improve your overall health, consider learning to ride a bike. So when I teach my balance classes, I often talk about the strength of the lower body from the waist down and how important it is. Yeah, your core is important too. That's all there. But I do a lot of exercises in that class that require you to strengthen the lower body muscles, especially your gluteus medius, which is a side muscle that comes off the side of your hip, and also just working on the quads, because the quads are beneficial, a big muscle in your body, which helps you get up and out of chairs, and also helps you climb stairs, also helps you climb hills on your bicycle. So the more you can do that sort of thing, the more strength you can keep in your lower body, the better your balance will be. And that takes away that risk of falling, which is often something that happens to folks as they get older. Can cycling benefit mental health and social well-being? But of course it can. It's half the reason why I ride my bike, because I just get such joy from it. It feels great to ride my bike. Even now that I have moved to using an e-bike for commuting with, it's still just as pleasurable to be out there, listening to the birds singing, being out on some of my favorite roads, and just really, you know, having a great time on my bike. It really improves your mental health in a big way. And if I'm on my bike every day, I'm good. If I don't get on my bike every day, well, you know, I might miss a day here and there. I've been working on my shed in the backyard. That's a big summer project I've been doing. And I get some satisfaction out of that too. But riding my bike really is it's a different thing. It just gives you this sense of freedom. And I've just got such passion for it that I don't think I could ever stop riding my bike. So how do you get started? Well, you get started by maybe contacting a local bike club. You might find there's other seniors there that might be riding their bikes. You'll find some like-minded folks there. Even if you don't go on the ride the first time, if you just show up to where they gather for their group rides, you can easily find that out. Our group often meets at the North Windham School here in North Windham, Connecticut, which is about 2 miles from my house. But even just to chat and kind of look around and go, wow, that person kind of looks like me. They're like my age. And, you know, you might see some people that are pretty dedicated still. They might still be, you know, wrapped in Lycra, so to speak. But, you know, they just want to ride. They're just out riding their bikes. And oftentimes, not that fast, you know, just out riding to enjoy the ride. And also the company, really, that goes along with it. So anyway, that's a thing that you want to take a look at. And there's a beginner's guide here of riding later in life. And that's the first thing that it actually starts with, is find a community for bike riders. You can probably find that through a League of American Bicyclists or the Bicycle Friendly America program. It'll give you a list of shops and clubs and classes and events and instructors that can help you with that sort of thing. I drag a lot of people in my spin class, because my spin class, although it has that air of, oh my God, to it, I don't teach that style of indoor cycling. I teach whatever you can handle. And yes, you can go very, very hard in my class. Yes, you can get a very solid workout in my class. But also, yes, you can ride at whatever level you want to ride at. There's no intimidation. And it has turned into a very social gathering too, as far as that goes. That gets you started. Now you're starting to get the fitness, and you're starting to get the the attachment to the saddle taken care of, so it doesn't bother you as much anymore. It takes four or five consistent rides. I also say not 4 or 5 weeks of one ride per week, but 4 or 5 consistent rides in a row, and then that saddle situation gets a whole lot better. So that gets you in a position where you might want to consider going outside now if you do that sort of thing. So you take a look at your physical needs. Why do you want to ride a bike? Well, I want to ride a bike because I used to ride my bike and it's fun. Or I want to ride a bike because I only live 5 miles from work and I'm thinking maybe, you know, I could ride my bike to work every once in a while. Good idea. Well, I'm retired. I don't ride to work anymore. But you know what? I like to use my bicycle to get around and maybe go to the grocery store and pick up a few things, that sort of thing. You know, there's a bunch of reasons why you should ride a bike and why it's not something that you want to just say, well, I used to do that, but I don't do that anymore. And, you know, the bike is there. It's your friend. It got you a lot of places over the years. Take a look back. Remember all the wonderful things you did on your bicycle. You know, I think of the years of, well, my big endeavor on my bike, what that got me super hooked on cycling, was when I was 20 years old, I rode my bicycle across the country. I did a 4,000-mile bike trip tour across the country. Full panniers, tent, sleeping bag, the whole works, loaded up on the bike and with absolutely no idea what I was doing other than the fact that I liked to ride my bike. And I learned a lot along the way. It was a good thing. It was definitely a good thing to do. And that was what was a major turning point in my life and kept me into cycling for forever after that. So anyway, take a look at your physical needs, what you want to do with your bike. If you're looking at an e-bike, I also tell people to remember that e-bike is going to be heavy. And so you need to learn how to coordinate that and lift it. If you go to the local bike shop, they'll show you how to put it in the back of your car without straining yourself. Or maybe they'll introduce you to a bike rack, which fits nicely on the back of the car, which is not so hard to put the bike on. And so if you need to transport it for any reason. But lifting your leg over the top of a bike, if you haven't done it in a long time, you know, it can be a bit of a trick. And that's a trick in your balance and the stability. And if it's an e-bike, it's heavy, so they tend to be a little awkward as far as that goes. Consider a step-through frame. Yeah, we used to call them ladies' frames, but we don't do that anymore because we are so much more socially and politically correct these days. It's a step-through, and it allows you to just step through. Pretty simple, right? And it's not a compromise. It's actually an asset to have something like that. So that's another thing to look at, is maybe you need something that's a little more oriented in that direction. And then when you get... when you do pick up a new bike, or if you're fixing up an old bike or whatever, put some wider tires on it, folks. I can't tell you enough about the benefits of a wide tire. Stability-wise, they're better. Comfort-wise, they're better. If your bike is so old that it won't take a wider tire, maybe you should consider just, you know, hanging it up on the wall and remembering the days and get yourself a new bike or something that at least is newer enough that you can, you know, you can ride it comfortably. I chose a hybrid bike for when I did my conversion over from a regular bike to an e-bike. And that hybrid bike is just great. It's just a great commuter. It's got a rack on it. It's got the ability to handle extra weight. If you need to, you know, really load it up, I can pull a trailer with it. It's just really kind of the perfect all-round bike. I have yet to put the fenders on that are coming in towards the fall season here because, you know, it starts getting a little wet. Sometimes you get caught in the rain. That way it would keep it a little bit drier and cleaner, keep me a little bit drier and cleaner. But it's just kind of a perfect bike. It's got low enough gears to be able to go up the steepest of hills. It's got high enough gears to go as fast as I need to go down a hill. Not as I want to go, as I need to go. Hear that? It's a commuter. That's what it's for. So, you know, you might want to find something similar to that. Maybe you might want to find something that is, you're not going to commute with it. You're just going to go out and ride around on it. You don't need any of the extra stuff on there. So you can do that. And when you get yourself heading in this direction, you're going to start finding easy and accessible places to ride. You're going to start finding the bike trails. And I would highly recommend getting something that has a little bit more of a gravel road kind of ride to it, so it could handle a gravel road. That might be a mountain bike for some of you, but it also might be a hybrid or it might be a gravel bike. There's a lot of different options out there. And so you can pretty much get yourself involved in any level of bicycle, but you got to start somewhere and you got to make the commitment. And once you do, I don't think you'll be disappointed. So yeah, you can still get back into it. I was talking to a woman in my class the other day and I mentioned something to her. I know her son rides with us a lot. And I mentioned something to her about, well, do you have a bike? And she said, well, I do have a bike, but, you know, I haven't ridden it in a while. And I said, if you need a trainer, I have a couple of extra ones at the house. And I said, have your son talk to me and we'll start you out by just putting your bike on a trainer and get 20 minutes on the bike every day until you start feeling like, you know what, I think I want to take this outside because I'm getting really bored with the wall in my family room, or, you know, I've seen enough TV for now, whatever you use to entertain yourself when you get on your bike indoors. But, you know, that kind of gets you started, and then you take it from there. That's it. So, next on my list here, let's see, what do I have next on my list here? Oh, goodness gracious. So, this is a shout out to Atlanta, Georgia. The 15th Street extension, I had mentioned it earlier in the show, is designed for better cyclist, pedestrian, and driver mobility. So what you see here, I've got a big picture in front of me. It shows the big box out green zones for safely making turns as a cyclist, and the bike pathways on both sides of the road, which are really, really nice. But the Midtown Alliance reported that the 15th Street Extension Project, which has been taking shape since early 2024, around two very busy north-south traffic corridors, should wrap up construction and be open to access by the end of August. Doing so will mark an extremely rare example of a new street connection with an established grid in a dense urban setting, notes the organization. The properties in question were formerly two empty lots. So anyway, the new east-west connector has potential to be a game changer for pedestrians, cyclists, and motorists, according to Midtown Alliance, that it'll create a multimodal, people-friendly two-block link from the Art Center, that's MARTA station, to William Street near the downtown connector. Coming soon are all three lanes of the public roadway between West Peachtree and Spring Street, including two left turn lanes at both those one-way streets. West of that, expect a single lane through each direction connecting to William Street. So anyway, they've just really opened it up. There's some great pictures here. It looks like the work has included the Georgia Department of Transportation's final signal inspection on the 15th on 15th Street in late July, which has already happened. And of course, roadway striping, green bike lane markings are expected to be installed in the week of August 17th. Hey, that's right now. Look at that. So according to the Atlanta Department of Transportation, the initial planning efforts for the 15th Street extension date all the way back to November of 2016. Yes, infrastructure takes time, folks, and a little bit of patience and constant checking back, and also pushing local officials to make sure that they're actually getting the job done. Patrick says a hybrid bike is the best sense for a commuting bike. It's easy to manage, stable handling, and good gears. Pure good value. I agree, Patrick. Absolutely. I think it's just the right bike. And sometimes you just got to pick the right bike for what you're doing. I actually I've kind of started to enjoy my hybrid bike more than I thought I was going to. So, yeah. Yeah, it's great. Thank you for listening. So anyway, that infrastructure thing that I talk about all the time is just, it is just so, it's a big discussion here on Bicycle Talk, because I really think that we just don't spend enough time and money working on our infrastructure. So there, here's a question. So how much can bike lanes actually increase cycling? The study isn't simply counting cyclists before and after a bike lane is installed. Instead, researchers used French census data covering 6.7 million observations and combined it with spatial information about cycling infrastructure. They developed four statistical models to examine how cycling infrastructure in both municipality where someone lives and the municipality where they work relates to the likelihood of commuting by a bicycle. Distinction between home and work turned out to be particularly interesting. Overall, the researchers found that cycling infrastructure near both ends of a commute matter, but the effect changes dependently on the density of the community. So, high-density areas, bike infrastructure around the workplace appears particularly important. This is a no-brainer thing here. The study found that one unit increase in the rate of cycling lanes around the workplace was associated with about 22% increase of the probability of cycling to work. In lower-density communities, the relationship shifts more towards the home end of the trip. The researchers found that one unit increase in the rate of cycle lanes in the municipality of residence was associated with an approximately 65% increase in the probability of cycling to work, although the workplace study result in those areas was not statistically significant. Doesn't mean that adding a single bike lane suddenly makes cycling a 65% more popular situation. The researchers are measuring the change in the rate of cycling infrastructure with their statistical model rather than saying that one particular lane will generate 65% increase in riders. Still, the broader finding is important. Infrastructure works differently in different kinds of cities. So it's not just getting people onto bikes. It's about building a network. So as you build a network, and this is I noticed this when I was out visiting my son in Chicago. There's a main drag that goes back and forth that is well thought out and has bicycle commuting lanes in it. And that is the artery that carries people across the city. And then you have your small veins, which go off into the neighborhoods, depending on how busy or how populated they are. And, you know, but it has to start with that main artery. That's really kind of the way it works. And then as the demand increases, you will find the little spurs that go off to the sides will also start to increase. But you have to start it somewhere. And if you start with veins and then work towards arteries, you're going to end up taking a lot of people into an area that could be quite dangerous to ride their bike in. So it's better to go the opposite direction. Build from the top and spread out from there. And as you get more and more popularity with that, you know, people, they'll learn to use the side streets to their advantage, because the side streets in a city could be less traveled, less trafficked, a lot easier to get around on. And then when you get out to the main boulevard, then you've got the option of getting yourself right out there on a bike lane that's protected and safe. So infrastructure, it's just so incredibly important. And it's then we have bike parking. This is a big one. So cycling infrastructure tends to get most of the attention and most of the political arguments, but bike parking is less glamorous, but it's really important. And it's so important that it is explained to urban developers as to why we need more bike parking. because the bike parking, if I can take a parallel parking space that would contain a very large SUV, let's pick on the largest vehicle we can find here, and I can easily put 12 bicycles into that space. Now, how many people can you put into that large SUV, or how many people normally drive around in that large SUV? I'm going to guess one or two, and maybe on a good day the kids are going off to sports events or whatever, mom might have three kids in the back. You never know, but rarely will you see 12 in a vehicle of that size. Whereas if you have parking for just one space of parking for 12 bicycles, you have potentially 12 customers. And most of those customers, I will say, will probably be adults, and they will be spending money because they have disposable income, of which they're gaining because they don't drive a car anymore. They ride their bicycle instead, and they're saving all sorts of money so they can do the fun things in life, like ride their bike and eat and enjoy others' company. And that's kind of a side bonus that you get from cycling. All right. So, like I said, the parking is less glamorous, but if you can do it right, you can probably set up your bike parking. And this is what I encourage developers to do when I hear about a new parking garage going in, for instance. Why do we need a new parking garage? We already have far more parking spaces in the United States than we have cars. That is a fact, by the way. I did look that up a while back, and I was overwhelmed by the number of parking spaces we have versus the number of cars we have. It's just we take paradise and we put up a parking lot. You know the song? Do you know who sang it? You could always mention it in my comments. Anyway, the idea of putting a bicycle parking area in a parking garage is wonderful. Why? Because all the new parking garages that I am starting to see, especially up here on our University of Connecticut campus, they are now metered by cameras. So you drive your car in, it gets your plate number, and then you go over and you pay by your plate number, I guess, is how you do it. I don't know. I've never really spent a lot of time doing that sort of thing, because if I'm going to go to campus, I'm going to ride my bike around there. And rarely do I actually use a parking garage. But what if there was right there where the cameras are, where it sees everything that happens and goes on? Why isn't there bicycle parking there? You know, now I'm not talking about just one parking space. I'm gonna swipe three of them from you, because this thing is going to grow, and we need a good, safe place to put the bikes. Behind some sort of a chain link fence would be best, because there is some extra added protection there. And obviously, if you're parking in there, you would be parking with many others, and so you would need some sort of a racking or stand system of which to do it. But it just makes sense. It just makes a lot of sense. So I'm always pushing parking garages to make sure they put cycling infrastructure into their program when they're building something like this. And it's oftentimes it's neglected, because all we think about with parking garages are cars and trucks. Yeah, the same old problem that we have all the time. So you see more and more progressive cities that are starting to pay attention to that. Even this little tiny town of Willimantic that's next to us, they have bike racks right in the parking garage that is adjacent to the police department. Talk about intimidating. I don't think you're going to steal a bike from that bike rack, because the police department is right there. So there's eyes watching all the time. And again, with a camera system, if you do lose a bicycle, you could probably figure out who took it from you, because it's recorded. So, you know, let's put more bike parking in parking garages. You're going to lose two or three spaces. I don't care, but I know some people who drive cars might care. But too bad. The bike is a much more viable way of transporting yourself. It's cost effective for everyone, and it produces more revenue for everyone too, even if the bikes are allowed to park there for free, which I think they should be. But that is one of the bonuses you get for riding your bike. I agree, I feel anyway. So let's see, what else do I have here? This is an interesting thing. Friday's headlines, this is from a few weeks ago. If you want to walk and bike safely, stay out of the South. I thought that was kind of funny, but Albuquerque and a bunch of other Sunbelt cities are the most dangerous for walking, according to analysis of walk scores and pedestrian death statistics. The study shows a regional divide between car-dependent sprawl in the wide streets of the South and Southwest and the rest of the country. What do you know, huh? All right, so why would that be? Well, if you've ever been to Albuquerque, or if you've ever been to any of those other really big Southwest cities, or even Southern cities like, let's say, Atlanta, although Atlanta, I just told you, is paying attention to this sort of thing. They're just crowded with lots and lots and lots of cars, and it just makes it more dangerous for riding your bicycle and for transporting yourself by your feet too. So it's just a study out of California suggests that those flock cameras misread license plates 70% of the time. That's great. So now they have this license plate reading system that are sending traffic violations out to drivers if they don't work. It's just, we are so backwards and broken here in the United States. Oh, well, that's what we are, and that's where we're at. I have to go on to some other things in the show. I'm going to get out of the commuting setup here, and we are going to go, and we're going to talk about a few things that are up and coming. But while I was looking through last week's episode and thinking about the Tour de Femme and how, you know, great it is, I decided that I wanted to see what women bicycle racers, professional bicycle racers, make financially. So the winner of the Tour de Femme gets 50,000 euros, but salaries, bonuses, and shared prize money tell a bigger story. 50 grand to win the Tour de Femme. That's kind of disgusting. Anyway, so that's about $57,000. It's, you know, a lot of money, but it's not really a number that tells you what a Tour de France femme rider makes. It's $50,000 worth of prize money, not salary. Every rider is paid by her team, and the race prizes sit on top of that compensation. But because no rider wins the overall without the help of her team, the winner's prize goes into a team pool, which is shared among riders and staff. So no, the yellow jersey winner is not walking away with 50 grand all to herself. She's got to split it up. Rider contracts are private, which means exact salaries are rarely disclosed, and what a rider makes quickly becomes a swamp of minimums, estimates, bonuses, and leverage. At the women's tour level, the minimum salary for an employed rider rose to 38,000 euro or $43,000 in 2025. Neo pros have separate lower limits, and women's pro teams operate in different salary floors. Industry reporting suggests that many established women's world tour riders earn between 80 euro and 100 euro. That's $91,000 to $114,000 annually. Experienced domestiques and consistent race winners make somewhere between 150 and 250,000 euros, or 171,000 to 285,000 in US dollars. So not so bad. You know, I wouldn't quit my day job over it, but then again, maybe you would quit your day job over it if you were that good. The point is that you definitely have to be that good in order to make that kind of money. So current estimates put Demi Vollering's annual team salary at just under €1 million or $1.14 million. Lotte Capecchi is around 900,000 euros or 1.03 million, while Kasia Nylander-Finney reported earns of about 600,000 euros or $685,000. Lorenda Wiebes, Pauline Ferrand-Prevot, Marianne Vos, Elisa Balsamo, and Kristen Faulkner each are estimated somewhere around 500,000 euros or $570,900 per season. Their estimates, not audited payroll records, and generally exclude performance bonuses, personal sponsorships, appearance fees, and endorsements. So still, Vollering's estimated team salary alone is nearly 20 times the official prize for winning the Tour de Femme. So it's, like I said, there's... how does a Tour de France Femme prize money compare with the men's Tour de France? 2026 Tour de France Femmes awards 260 euro, 297,000 in prize money. This, the men's Tour de France distributes 2.3 million euros or $2.6 million, about 8.8 times as much. The women's winner earns 50 euro versus the men's winner earns 500,000 euro. So, yeah, there's a bit of a difference here. It's like you're better off to learn how to play basketball and play with the WNBA now that they finally got their act together. You know, and it's still a hard, being a professional athlete is not an easy job. It's not an easy effort at all. So I wouldn't say that I would go jumping ship to become a professional bike racer overnight, because obviously there's not a lot there to, you just got to be real, real careful about that. So, that's kind of my bike racing thing, although I do have to mention something else in the bike racing world, and that is the Vuelta a España 2026 is happening from the 22nd of August until the 13th of September. So right around the corner, folks, and you'll never guess, but Tadej Pogačar is the overwhelming heavy favorite to win the Vuelta a España. Following his dominant Tour de France victory, the Slovenian star enters the final Grand Tour of the season, aiming to add the red jersey to his collection. Yeah, Tadej is not done yet. So we will see what happens there. I was looking at a route profile from the Vuelta. It looks obviously very challenging, as it should be. So, you know, we'll see more about that in the future and how it works. I wanted to end today's episode, I think I got time to do this, on summer bike commuting tips. It has been a hot summer, folks. It has been real hot, like hotter than normal. And riding your bicycle as a commuting machine has some many advantages, but also has a disadvantage of being out in that summer heat at sometimes the wrong time of the day. Now, in my case, when I commute on my bike, I am rolling out. It's not even light out yet in many cases. We get maybe 2 months out of the year I'm actually able to leave my house in daylight. But it's just barely daylight at that point. And now I see that the sun is definitely rising a little bit later in the day. So I got my lights on again. I am definitely commuting in the dark. And so are others. I have a friend who commutes to the spin class now on a regular basis. And I dug through some of my old salesman samples because I saw him using a light that was inappropriate for riding in the dark, and I got him a really nice light and said, here, take this, use this, you're going to be amazed when you see how much light this thing puts out. So I feel better because I know Bob will be a lot safer when he's riding his bike in the morning. He'll be able to actually see the deer before he hits the deer. Yeah, it's true. We have deer here. Lots of deer. But it is really nice to have that kind of light on your bike. It also tends to attract a lot more attention from the cars coming the other way, if you see a car at that time of day. And once again, when you're out super early in the morning, the idea that you might see a car on a back road is pretty rare. So it's kind of cool. It's kind of a cool thing for sure. So, but moving back to the summer bike commute, you know, you got sunshine in your face, you got quiet early morning streets, you got the freedom of skipping traffic while getting to in a workout before your day even begins. Yeah, it's kind of a workout. I mean, it's your commute, and it probably shouldn't be treated as much as a workout. It should be treated more as transportation. But, you know, everybody's got their thing and how they want to do it. But hot weather cycling comes with real challenges. Rising temperatures, blazing pavement, humidity, dehydration, skipping traffic while getting into in a workout before the workday even begins. You know, there's a lot of things about summer cycling that can be tough, especially when it's hot out. But the earlier you get going, I gotta tell you, it's really pretty nice, and you don't have to deal with that problem of the extreme heat. I have a friend who she lives in Phoenix, Arizona. It gets hot there. It not only gets hot there, it stays hot there. And she said all of her workouts began at 5 a.m. and had to be done by 7 because it was just so hot. And at 5 a.m, it was 80 degrees out. So what we sometimes see as a high for the day, that was the beginning of the day there. And then their temperatures go over 100 degrees. So it's just crazy. You really got to plan your day around that. If you're commuting, what you're going to find is that you're probably going to start in a cooler part of the day, which is really nice, and maybe even have to, you know, bring a jacket with you or a vest with you or something like that. Maybe knee warmers. Just easy stuff to put on and take off would be my recommendation to you. And as you leave and go back home, you're going to find that the temperature has gone quite a ways up. So you really have to think a lot more about your attire when you're commuting. And that's super easy to do because it's, you know, you just carry your clothes with you. If you have a commuter bike, you probably have a set of panniers on it, maybe a rack pack on the back, something that you can carry your changes of clothes with. And it really, it makes a big, big difference to be able to have that luxury of being able to change your clothes into more comfortable clothing, depending on what time of day it is. Hydrate before, during, and after your ride. This has become a really strong point. I've been pushing this for a number of episodes about the hydration thing, as I'm going to take a quick drink here. Hydration before your ride is becoming a well-known subject of you really need to spend a lot more attention on the before the ride than even as much as you do during the ride and after the ride. But a good rule for hot weather cycling is to drink small amounts consistently instead of waiting until you feel thirsty. Of course, you can also use electrolyte tablets or sports drinks, although my dentist yelled at me the other day and said, "So what are you drinking?" And I said, "Well, I drink, you know, a lot of water." And I said, "I drink a lot of electrolytes because I'm working out all the time." And he went, "You got to be careful of those electrolytes. Here's a tip from my local dentist." And he said that if you're going to drink electrolytes, it's just like drinking soda, like bad soda. He said there's enough acid within the electrolytes that it's not good for your teeth. And he said, so after you drink your electrolyte, if you had a bottle full of electrolyte, he said also have a bottle full of water and kind of swish your mouth out really good to get the electrolytes out of your mouth and out of your, and get the water back into your system, just kind of flushing your mouth out. So little tip there from my local dentist who said, we need to start watching what you're drinking. He said, Diet Coke. I went, ooh, why would I ever drink anything as disgusting as a Diet Coke? I would never do it. Anyway, everybody's got their thing, right? So hydration is really, really important. And that's why you just hydrate like crazy before you leave the house. And yeah, you may have to find a place to stop along the way, or maybe not. Maybe you'll have enough in you to get you to work, and then you'll find a place to take care of that. But you do have to pay attention to that and plan. I already talked about this, planning your commute around the heat, and that is essential and helpful. And maybe if you're using your cycling commute as an intense part of your workout day because, you know, you need to get some miles in, you need to get some high intensity miles in, do it in the morning. In the evening, cool breeze it, man. Just go slow on the way home. Just enjoy everything you see along the way. Say hi to people that are out working in their yards, whatever. Become that really sociable and social creature that you can be when you're on your bike. Use panniers instead of a backpack. Very, very important. Definitely want to keep anything off of your back that's going to create more of a heat sink. So that can be a problem. And of course, your summer cycling commuting can improve your fitness, especially if you're doing it every day. You also got to know when to take a break. And if you're feeling dizzy or nauseated or weak, or overheated while you're riding, stop immediately and rest in a shaded area. Heat exhaustion can escalate quickly, especially during humid weather or prolonged sun exposure. So you just gotta try to learn how to ride smart, that's all. And you can do it. You can do this. You can commute, and boy, this is the best time of the year to do it because it's warm out and it's just a real pleasure to be out there and in the world at that time of day. It's just a lovely, lovely thing. So that pretty much brings me to the end of the show, folks. Give me your opinion. TikTok, those gas prices, they just went up again. We keep fighting with people that are in regions that oil and gas are exported from, and it just keeps jacking the price up. Are you disgusted yet? Are you ready to park that car? When you decide that your freedom begins with the thing that you discovered when you were a child, depending on your bike, your world will change. Remember, bicycling is freedom. Life is better for everyone when more people ride bikes, because when more people bike, people are happier, they're healthier, our communities are safer and friendlier, and our planet is greener. This is not rocket science, folks. Today, we can help more people know the joy of bicycling. Just pass on the good word. I'm going to say it again. It won't be my last time. Get loud. Get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, and the safe places to ride your bike. And get out there and do your part. And hey, take that Pedal and Run challenge. Consider parking your car just one day. Just one day, and ride your bike instead. You will surprise yourself. And remember, whether you're riding your bike or driving your car, please be safe and kind. And remember that every person you pass has someone waiting for them at home. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of the station. You've been listening to Bicycle Talk on WHUS Radio. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. If you'd like to contribute information to the show, send me an email, bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Pedal and Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thanks for listening. Get on your bike.